Now in year number 6, it's a Yank on the Footy with Craig Wessels. Everybody sit back and enjoy a chat about the greatest game on the face of the earth. Thanks for listening, everybody, and I do hope you'll share it with your friends and family. Cheers! Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 305 of A Yank on the Footy. I'm Craig Wessels, coming to you from Sandusky, Ohio, and thanks for checking out this episode. This is the next episode in my previews for the 2024 season, and in just a moment, I am going to be joined by Keegan Best and Matthew Walsh from the Turn Over the Tape podcast as we preview the Gold Coast Suns for 2024. And if you talk about a club that is, I think, going to be creeping up the ladder, this might be it. Don't forget, everybody, if you are interested in getting your local footy club getting a shout out during an upcoming episode, I do hope you'll reach out to me. Shoot me an email at yankonthefooty@gmail.com. Head over to my website, yankonthefooty.com. You can give me a follow on all my socials there. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast also so that when new episodes come out, they'll be in your inbox within a few minutes of the time that they get released, linked right back to the website. Okay, like I said, I do hope you'll check that out. If you want to help out the podcast, you can certainly do that over there as well with the Redbubble store page, or click on that Buy Me a Coffee button. Remember, I am coming to Australia in July, and I would love to meet you. I'm hoping to meet up with as many people and get some great ideas on some different touristy things that I can do while I'm there as well. Of course, as you may be able to figure out, I will be going to visit the Vegemite factory. There are 24 empty jars over my left shoulder right there. And 3 full ones right there. Those are my reserve jars if you're watching on YouTube. So today's club of the episode are the Broadbeach Cats of the Queensland Australian Football League. And this club is in the southern suburbs of Gold Coast. They've been around since 1971, but according to what I found online, they didn't start competing at the AFLQ level until 1997. And the Cats, they play their home games at the Subaru Oval, and they're going to be opening up their 2024 fixture against the Aspley Hornets on 6 April at the Zups Aspley Oval, and they'll be playing their home opener round 2 against Labrador. And this year they're going to be led by their new senior coach, Danny Nolan. And looking through some of the information that I found on the club, it's almost like a who's who's list here of great talent. And I didn't list all of the names here, but some of the people who've played with this club at one time or another: Nick Riewoldt, Lockie Weller, Dane Zorko, Will Ashcroft. In fact, Dane Zorko's brother coached his team for a while as well. Bailey Scott, Nathan Ablett, to name a few. There were another dozen or so players I could have listed here as well, but just amazing, this list of players, you know, playing on this club up in Queensland. So let's go ahead and jump into my chat with Keegan and with Matt from the Turn Over the Tape podcast. Looking forward to this. I do want to give a quick shout out to my mate, Linton, who has been with me the last few years previewing the Gold Coast Suns. Linton, I didn't forget about you, but I figured it might not be a bad idea to help to promote the Suns a little bit by bringing one of the Suns podcasts on this time around, that maybe some folks from my little small sphere of the world might help with some listenership with them. So I did not forget about you, King Linton. Okay. All right, folks, let's go ahead and jump into my chat with Keegan and with Matt. All right, ladies and gentlemen, my guests for our Gold Coast preview are the hosts of the Turn Over the Tape podcast, Keegan Best and Matthew Walsh. Gentlemen, thanks for getting up today early and rearranging your schedule so we could sit down and chat. I truly appreciate it. How are we doing today?
Yeah, we're doing pretty well. Yeah, thank you for having us. Much appreciated.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Going well. Thankfully, you didn't have to rearrange too much, given it's the middle of the day. It's more just shoving lunch aside and having some footy.
Work lunch has been moved to this point in time.
that's okay. I mean, I have my cup of decaf coffee here to get me through the rest of the night here. I mean, it's about a quarter till 9. I woke up at 3:30 this morning and couldn't fall back asleep. So I'm I was in my classroom at about 10 after 5 this morning. So I got a lot done this morning. I'm going to sleep well tonight, but and then I'll be up late tomorrow night, as we were talking about off air, because I'll be I'll be trying to do my best Dave Draymond imitation there. There we go. You asked me about that earlier. There we go. Go ahead and get that out of the way early.
That was great.
That was great.
That was awful. I'll tell you, my Frank Walker imitation is much better than that, but you'll have to go back and find that in a previous episode.
Intrigue.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's yeah, I want to come there and try to buy some tile from him while I'm there too this year. So gentlemen, tell us first of all, before we get into talking about the club, how did the podcast come about?
Do you want to take this one, Keeks?
Yeah, I can probably take this one. So Matt and I, we've been friends since primary school, pretty much. So back when we were like 10, 11, we sort of met and sort of stayed friends throughout high school and further on than that. And then the Suns came into existence before the Gold Coast was a club. I actually supported West Coast, funnily enough. So I did do the disastrous thing of changing clubs when you're not really supposed to. But Gold Coast came in and Matt and I really sort of really got into it, and there's a few of our other friends as well. One of my first memories of the Gold Coast is me, Matt, and another friend of ours, I think it would have been Josh, sitting in my lounge room watching Justin Westhoff miss the goal after the siren for Port Adelaide to give us our first win, and us just getting up out of our feet and jumping around the lounge room, even though I wasn't even a Gold Coast fan at the time.
Yeah.
But from then on, traveling and stuff, traveling overseas, being a Gold Coast fan, I sort of never really had that person to sort of vent with or talk to. And then when I moved to Melbourne, when I came back to Australia, I still didn't have that. So this sort of podcast was sort of used as a vehicle for myself and Matt to sort of just get to vent, because as you could probably tell, Gold Coast haven't had a lot of highs. So it has been a good space to sort of talk about what's going on, how we can improve, where we can see progress, but also just to vent. And if things aren't going our way, we've always got someone to talk to about that, almost like a support group.
And if nothing else, it's a great way for two mates who've been friends for a long time to stay in touch with one another over a long distance and still, you know, be able to kind of share that friendship with other people as well, and share this commonality. Now, you talked about, you know, giving up your support for West Coast to become a Gold Coast supporter. I think that you're allowed to have a pass for that because you didn't have the option to support a local club at the time. And once the local club comes into existence, I think you are absolutely allowed to choose to support that club. You know,
I'll write that down. I'll take that with me.
Yeah. I mean, the folks that are, you know, that are in Tasmania who, you know, if the Tasmanian club comes to fruition, who are supporters of other clubs, are going to, I would assume, are going to gravitate towards that new, you know, Tasmanian club, which I've mentioned it a few times before. I know they keep talking about them being the Devils. I am a huge fan of them having nice yellow jumpers and calling themselves the Hobart Simpsons, but that's not going to happen.
that would be a turn up.
But, you know, and again, if they bring a 20th club in, you know, let's say that club comes in Perth or in Adelaide, and let's say it's a club that, you know, people who supported, you know, Fremantle or West Coast, but they were also a supporter of another club in the Waffle, then they may very well decide that they're going to support that new club, you know, like the West Fremantle or, you know, that sort of thing. So they may, you know, change their allegiances there because they had supported that Waffle club. So you're certainly allowed to support Gold Coast because the club came in there. You're allowed to do that. And if anybody's told you you're not, first of all, they're on the other side of the country, so you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, it's just a bit of like friendly jabbing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's you know, we I don't know if either of you guys follow the NFL at all, but you know, I'm a lifelong Cleveland Browns fan, and you know, the Browns have had they won the championship when I was a year old back in 1964, and I was in diapers when they won the championship, and I'm afraid I may be back in diapers before they win it again. But it's, you know, it's the team that I absolutely love. And, you know, and you got a lot of local folks who support, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, which are a couple of hours further to the east. And it's just, you know, I they've been more successful. Okay, if you want to do that, whatever. I guess I can't change your mind. But Matthew, you brought up an interesting point. You said that you in the stuff that you jotted down, you were it seems like you were first and foremost a rugby fan when the game came into play. And then and I had to look up this name because I was not familiar with it at all, but a gentleman by the name of Carmichael Hunt, who made the shift or the transition from rugby to the AFL. Did that defection, first of all, tell me about the Hunt transition that helped to bring you on board with the Suns. And then I have another follow-up with this one for you then.
Sure. So my character arc has me following league as I'm growing up as a child. My uncle lived with us for a year when I was in my formative years, took me to Broncos games every week. And it was just hard not to get swept up in the excitement. They were a successful team. They were a new team. They're exciting. Mm-hmm. And it's just so happened that the last premiership that they won in 2006, also a West Coast premiership year, the team, I'm 18, 19. It's right in the peak of it being imprinted upon me basically for the rest of my life.
Right.
And Carmichael was the brave fullback for the Broncos. His runs were death-defying. He would run at full pelt at men twice his size and just accept the punishment that came with it because it meant that there were more meters gained for his team. So I always had a great respect for him, and he was a Broncos premiership player. So when the Suns came around and the story broke that he was looking to play for the Suns, the morbid curiosity is immediate. There's a natural tension, especially in the more northern states, between league and mm-hmm. AFL, and this felt like a defection in some quarters and a waste of money in others. But for me, it was Carmichael, a player that I really quite liked, playing at a team that now suddenly was 5K down the road, and mixed with, I think, the perfect cocktail of friends that support the Suns and the manner in which they started, it really sort of brought me across and into the AFL sphere. Before then, I sort of only had tangential exposure, whereas now I really thoroughly enjoy the game. So that was my gateway.
Yeah, because the Lions or the Bears and the Lions were there, a little bit further north, but the Suns came in, and you kind of alluded to this already, but do you think that his departure from rugby actually helped to grow the rift between rugby supporters who might have come around to take interest in the AFL, or they thought to themselves, okay, if they're going to start poaching our players from our comp, I don't want anything to do with this. Let's have their own players there. Leave ours alone for this game that I already love. Go find your own players. I mean, was there that angst that took place there between the two comps?
I think the battle lines are pretty well drawn between league supporters, AFL supporters, and those who dabble between both camps like myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people are parochial one way or the other, russet on with their group one way or the other. The people who hate AFL would have, hated the move, and people who loved AFL probably hated the move. It's really the people who exist in the margins, like myself.
Brought everyone together.
Yeah. So I don't think it shifted the needle in terms of the Great League AFL divide, but it really was the perfect storm for me to jump across. And even if I don't know how many people the marketing campaign worked on, but the reason I don't think it was a total and abject failure was it worked on me. So surely, I know that's an anecdote, but there'd be a swathe of people who jumped onto the Suns on the back mm-hmm. of that curiosity, mixed with the fact that Carmichael wasn't doing it cynically. He took an entire year off from playing like the top level of a professional sport to play in the VFL in the Suns' first year before coming into the AFL.
Right,
it wasn't
right.
grabbing the money and running. It was grabbing the money and then disappearing for a year whilst he boned up on his skills. It was, mm-hmm. it didn't feel like he was cheating. It really felt like he gave it a genuine go. And I think that was another part that endeared me towards the change.
Yeah. And from what I read, it looked like he did grab the money too. I mean, like he was being paid, you know, in terms of the AFL, he was being paid very handsomely. Cause I think it said that he was one of only three players that were making $1 million plus at that point in time. Jonathan Brown was one of them. I can't remember who they said the third person was at that point in time, but
hopefully Ablett.
No, I don't think it was actually. It was somebody else.
History. Now I'm trying to think who that would be.
It was Buddy? It was somebody else. No, it wasn't Buddy then either. It was I'm just kind of scrolling through here right now that he had oh crud, now I'm not seeing it. I just read it here a few minutes ago and now I'm not seeing it here. I don't see it here off the top of my head here. So I'm not gonna spend any more time scrolling through here looking for it. But Jonathan Brown was one of the three players that I'll change the sports. Here we go. This might be where it is. Chris Judd was the other one. Chris Judd was the third.
That would make sense.
and that was money that was coming out of the league. And there's, you know, a quote from Paul Roos saying, you know, a player of his current ability would probably be worth only $100,000 in the AFL. So, and again, he had to grow into that, but the publicity of somebody with that big of a name coming from the other game into theirs. And again, I don't know if this young man had, I know that, you know, getting the toe in the door, if you will, in Queensland, and especially in the Gold Coast, has not been an easy task. I mean, it's been going on for a number of years now. I think the glass is filling. It's not full yet, but I think it's definitely more than halfway full. And there are some drips going into it right now. Okay. So you guys have got to be, ironically, it might be the dew that's filling it up. But too soon.
The wounds are completely closed. I can appreciate a good pun.
So, you know, it's I actually had tipped them to play finals last year. I had tipped them to make the eight last year. Now, just full disclosure, last year I did not know what the hell I was talking about because I did not have the Magpies in the eight. So. Mm.
Yeah. I think you were with Keegan on that one, to be fair.
Yeah, I had written the Magpies off as well last year.
Yeah. Now, I'm working on my ladder predictions right now, and I do have a top eight side that I'll tell you about it off air, but I have a top eight side that I think is going to fall out of the eight, much to the chagrin of a lot of people. I mean, I'll be honest. I don't know if these guys are going to make the eight this year. If they stay healthy, sure they could get there, but a lot of good things are going to have to happen. And of course, here's me thinking about coming to watch them for three or four rounds this year. They may not win a single game, but I'll have a good time anyway. So So I guess the first thing is, was it the right idea to jettison Stuart Dew?
Yes. I would say yes, and there's a reasoning why. This was a big topic on our podcast for a long time. I think it was right to jettison him. I think that his, and this is coming from someone that has no real idea about strategy and sort of the X's and O's of footy, but just the way that we looked and the way that we played just was way too focusing way too much on contested ball. And if we didn't win the contest, then we're completely blown out. Mm-hmm. And then it suffered as well because everyone was at the contest trying to get to win the ball, that if the ball went the other way, we were left very open defensively. And then we were cut up that way. Now, I think that he's a great, I think Drew was a great motivator. I think at the time when he came in, he was definitely the coach we needed. He was a coach that the players could get behind, that he could inspire. Mm-hmm. But just as we've progressed and now we're not that team of 18, 19, 20-year-olds like when Ben King and Jack Lukosius came in, there needs to be a bit more of an eye on strategy and setup and all that. And I think that's where Drew may have had maybe a bit of a weakness, or maybe not a core weakness, but his strategy that he wanted to implement maybe wouldn't work for the list that we currently had.
Okay. So with him having been gone, did you have anybody in mind that you thought would have been a good choice to come in? And was it Dema? And did you think he was a possibility?
I've been on the Dema train for a long time.
Okay.
Even before. Okay. I think start of last year, before this even came up, Drew got a contract the year before in 2022. He got a contract halfway through the year. Even in January in 2023, I was like, we should get Dema. Why haven't we got Dema?
Well,
Dema's available. Like, and so
Ask Brett Ratton how contracts work.
I've been on the
work.
Train for a while, and yeah. I'm stoked that he's in. I have no idea how contracts work. Again, I work in marketing. I don't have any idea how contracts work. But that was just me personally. And I'm like, and I'm stoked we got him in. But now the real graph starts, and now we need to start seeing a change in game plan. I'm very interested to see how different we look compared to how a Drew team looked, compared to how this Hardwick team will look this year.
Now, Matt, have you been able to get out to see any of the training, or has it been too warm for you and you've had to go into your pool?
Well, I don't even off into my pool. It's too chilly, obviously. So in terms of the training, I don't get a ton of opportunity, but I have a running track that does take me past Heritage Bank Stadium. Okay. And mostly through the summer, I've seen the girls training when there has been someone training, but I have gone past the lads, and I've definitely seen Lukosius and Tippett kicking it to each other. It looks intense, and I know that, you know, it's 30 degrees Celsius. It's usually 80 to 90% humidity when they're training. They look like they're giving it their absolute all. You can hear the thuds of their tackling as I'm jogging past, listening to whatever I'm doing to numb the pain of the fact that I'm on a run.
Yeah.
But they look strong, but that's anecdotal. This is the problem with the January-February period, is that you're just filled with all this optimism, right?
Right.
This is the most beautiful time of year. But it's always a case of setting the expectation right and not really, like, not being silly with the expectation setting. Like, obviously I want the Suns to go out and destroy every team and win the flag comfortably, but the stark reality is that even though we've brought Dimmer on and we have a bevy of young kids coming through the ranks, there's a pretty reasonable chance we still finish somewhere between 9th and 14th. It's very reasonable. So I'm trying to temper my expectations, but I'm an optimist at heart, sadly.
Well, and I think you can make an argument that there are probably 14 teams, maybe 15, who could make the top 8 this year. I think I think there's a couple teams that probably are, you know, can probably say to themselves, let's see some green shoots, and then maybe 2025 we're competing for a spot in the finals. We're getting closer to being in the finals. And I think West Coast would probably fall into that category. I think North Melbourne could fall into that category. I have a club who I think might make that jump this year. That I, and as a Cat supporter, I know I'm not supposed to say it, but I really think Hawthorn is going to take a significant leap this year.
If it's not this year, it's next.
Yeah, they'll be they're on the way back.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, Cat supporters listening to this are just gritting their teeth, because I'm supposed to hate Hawthorn just by my very existence as a Cat supporter. But, as you said earlier, Matt, you know, you didn't have it kind of in you, you know, you had to have it, you know, ingrained in you to support the game. I don't have that hatred towards any other club in me. I like to give as I mentioned to you off air, you know, the Richmond supporters, you know, a hard time about them having to make that trip all the way over to Marvel Stadium on occasion. And like I said, the it's not, you know, the irony of Dema having to go there round one is not lost on me. I appreciate the league having done that, and maybe they did that for that very reason. So you said you're an optimist, but overall, what are your expectations for this year? What do you, you know, what are you expecting from the club that, and what's a good year going to look like for the club for you?
I think a good year for the club is a narrowing of the band between our worst performance and our best performance. I think inevitably, if we do something like that, the results will naturally follow. We probably pick up a couple of wins when we would have lost them in previous years.
Okay.
The problem has been under the due tutelage that we sometimes lose our bundle. We sometimes just don't turn up for particular matches. There's just too big a bandwidth between our best and our worst. That narrows up. And if we can fix our entries going inside 50, I think we suddenly put ourselves in basically every game except against maybe Collingwood, Brisbane. That's it. I think Suns on their day could probably beat every team in the comp with the exception of those two, which is weird saying because we beat Lions last time out, but that's an aberration as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. That was a nice surprise at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah. So, absolutely.
So ladder position, obviously I want to play finals. If we finish eighth, I'm going no matter where it is in mm-hmm. the country to go watch them play. But
okay.
I think realistically, as boring as it is to say, I still want to see that progression, but it really is in seeing a solidified game style, clarity going forward inside 50, and no utterly rank performances.
Okay. Yeah. And how about you, Keegan?
I'm probably slightly more optimistic than Matt. only because I think all the parts are there to have a six, and that's depending on injuries. I think that all the parts are there. If King's healthy, if Miller, Anderson, and Rao stay healthy, if our defense can hold up, if Ballard and Collins, because I think our spine of Collins, Ballard, Miller, King, Lukosius is really strong. Mm-hmm. If they can all stay healthy and fit, then I think the rest of it should fall into place. The only question I will have is how, and it seems like this is the messaging coming out of the football club this preseason, is it's going to take some time to change, to get into the strategy, into the mind of what Dimmer wants them to do.
Okay.
And whether that takes 2 rounds, whether that takes 12 rounds, will ultimately have the impact, because I think the players are good enough and I think the talent is there, but it's if they can acclimatize quick enough to what Damien wants them to do.
Right, right. And I think that, you know, nobody who's a supporter of any club in the comp wants me to start, you know, making predictions in terms of the Coleman or the Brownlow, because last year my Brownlow selection was Tuke Miller. And my Coleman selection was Todd Marshall. Both of them missed significant time last year. So I don't know who I'm going to pick, but I'm not picking anybody from, you know, the Cats to win either of those awards, because whoever it is going to obviously get hurt, you know.
Yeah.
It has worked out that way. So are you worried about, you know, there being possibly too much overconfidence with Hardwick here, that, you know, that things are going to fall into place too quickly, that, oh, you know, the savior has arrived, everything is good with the world, you know? Now,
yeah.
And I would argue that I think that for the benefit of the comp as a whole, it's important that the Suns make finals as soon as possible, because yes, there's been a massive investment of capital in this club to get that foothold there, to hopefully garner some interest in the supporters there, to, you know, to try to tell them, hey, you know, forgive us if you're still ticked off about the whole Carmichael Hunt thing, you know, come watch this club. They're a good club. They've been working hard at it. Come see them. I said, I think it's just really important for the league, because it's going to then lead to hopefully increased membership, which is going to lead to increased revenue, which then allows the league to maybe divest a little bit from having to you know, use as much of an expenditure for them and for, you know, GWS, because they're going to have to very soon likely turn around and do the same thing with the Tasmanian club. And if they bring a 20th club into the comp, wherever that happens to be.
Yeah, it's interesting. So just off the first point, the overconfidence, I've got no problems with supporters being overconfident. I like being overconfident. Matt enjoys it. As much as he says he doesn't, he likes being overconfident. As long as that doesn't trickle down.
I've never been overconfident in my life.
As long as it doesn't trickle down into the players, okay. That's where you don't want the overconfidence to come in. Like supporters can be as confident as they want. Like if I have a North Melbourne supporter that comes to me and says, "We're going to win the premiership this year," I'm like, "Good for you." I hope that you feel good about that. But yeah, you hope that the players aren't buying into the dimmer hype, and you hope that they're focusing on what they're asked to do and not just, "Oh, Hardwick's here, it's just going to be an absolute cakewalk." But yeah, on the second point about the sort of the off field and the financial, I think that comes with success. Mm-hmm. And the reason I do think that is because if you look back on the first year of the Suns being in the competition, or the first couple of years, especially around that 2014 period where we looked like we were having a really good season, the stadium was pretty much filled out. I was living on the Gold Coast at that time, and I remember going to like games and there were 20,000 plus people there. So I feel like if the club's playing good football, and if we're doing well, and I think people will come. And I think it's also important to think that this is also about, and you can't keep saying the future, but you're seeing players now that are coming to the club that were Gold Coast Suns fans growing up.
Right.
So
right.
It's all about building that sort of that AFL community on the Gold Coast, but as well as getting people interested in football, and people that want to play for the Suns and want to play, even if it's just want to play football in general. That means there's more people that want to play in the draft, meaning the talent pool gets wider, and that seems to be the end game for what the AFL is looking at anyway.
So do you see the as far as looking a few years into the future, you know, with this young core, you know, with, you know, Anderson and Rowell, and, you know, we'll talk about, you know, we'll talk about Ben King and whether or not he's there next in 2025 or not. Sounds like he may be saying the right things, but does Gold Coast almost become, in a way, a destination club? Because as you said, you've got young players now who are coming through the academy who have been Gold Coast fans growing up. That this is where they're from, this is where they've lived, their life is in that community, much to the chagrin of the Victorian clubs who were unhappy about the whole academy thing and thinking, well, that's not fair. And, you know, because, and then they sit there and go, "Hey, well, we've got 14 father and son selections coming up here right now. So we're going to be, there's what, how many more Dacos brothers are coming through?" Or whatever the case may be, you know, I do find that a little interesting. At first, the whole thing with the father son thing, I think, or father daughter, depending upon the comp, is a unique thing. But I don't think that the Victorian clubs really have a leg to stand on when they try to have it both ways. We should be able to reap the benefit of that. But, you know, your academy thing, that you're trying to grow this game in your community to make it economically viable, to make it viable on the oval, to just make it a club that competes week in and week out, that wins its share of games, maybe makes the finals, maybe competes for a flag here in a couple of years. You know, the academy thing, you know, whether it be with you, whether it be with GWS or with Sydney, where the game is, you know, is still growing at the ground level. And again, this is me never having been there yet. Just think, you know, I almost think, you know, Victorian clubs have got to lighten up a little bit and just let this happen to allow this club to actually take root, because the roots have not grown deep enough in the club for that success to happen yet.
Have you been listening to our podcast?
Yeah, this sounds like our podcast. This just sounds like a transcript.
Can we take that excerpt and shove that into our next podcast?
You can go ahead and feel free to, you know, you can feel free to quote me or that, or copy that in there. Yeah, I'll send you the file for that. Yeah, it's I just You know, I kind of joked. I said, you know, if the whole father son thing, father daughter thing is going on, I said, you know, and you know, families are planning on having a lot of kids. Why don't some of these players, you know, and their wives go to like the you know, the fertility clinics and have like, you know, septuplets? I mean, you could you know, fill out a whole damn forward line at one fell swoop. You know, if you wanted to do that, you know, it's.
I don't know. List management actually requires you to spend some money at the fertility clinic. That's the true end game of the NFL.
Yeah, the fertility clinic salary cap will be the next thing that comes into effect.
There you go. So, you know, do you think you're going to be a destination club for these young men and women who have grown up with the game in the Gold Coast?
Requires success. That's truly the thing that will spring forth the good times. If we have success, people will come here. It is a really nice place to live, the Gold Coast. There's no denying that. If we can show that there is the likelihood of having premiership success, which a lot of these players crave, that happily take salary cuts to experience it, then absolutely. It is completely conditional on that. I think Geelong is probably the best example of that in Victoria, because they're not in Melbourne. They're an hour's drive out.
Right.
And, you know, if you ask someone from Melbourne, would you move out of Melbourne to Geelong? My suspicion is no, but Geelong supporters are rusted onto their team. And I think I saw it was about a year ago, but the Geelong stat was that they'd never lost four games in a row within like a 6,000 day period. Like just this absolute continued sustained success, constantly making finals, prelims, grand finals, just with the degree of consistency that they had. I'd go play for Geelong if they wanted me. Give me that success.
Yeah,
and I think they're going to see some turnover there. But you know, I just looking at it, as you said, you know, it looks like a great place. You know, you're kind of a, you know, if you want to be away from the media spotlight and just, you know, play, you know, good footy on what is hopefully going to be a quality club. You know, Gold Coast or even Brisbane, or now, heck, even, you know, you look at what GWS did last year. I mean, they just, you know, their revitalization, you know, when you looked at and you saw who they dumped, you know, a couple of players off onto Richmond last year. I'm sure that you guys were thinking the same way. This isn't a club that's going to be sniffing finals in 2023. And yet they made it to, you know, the final four. It's, you know, they got to a prelim. Yeah, so you can't.
Yeah, there's a lot of built up jealousy from me towards GWS.
Well, no, I get it, but you know, but and also, you know, you got, you know, Kingsley, if I'm not mistaken, he's part of the Hardwick coaching tree, if I'm not mistaken. Didn't he come from Richmond? I think he did.
Egan?
I think Adam Kingsley came from Richmond, I believe.
Yeah, he's a former Dimmer disciple, if you put it ever so nicely.
Yeah. So, you know, it's I think that by 2026 at the latest, you guys are going to be, you know, you guys are going to be consistently competing for, you know, a spot in, you know, in the eight for the foreseeable future. You know, I really think so. And you know, you were able to bring in, you know, a number of, you know, young men through the academy, which, you know, the rules are the rules. I mean, it's you know, it you're allowed to do that, and I think you should be able to do that. And again, it's trying to level the playing field a little bit, because, you know, Gold Coast, GWS are still in many ways, you know, even though there have been probably bad decisions made in terms of list management, still trying to level the playing field with the Victorian clubs, or even the clubs in, you know, in Perth or in Adelaide.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be a constant, like, back and forth. Like, to be perfectly honest, I put my hands up. I think there should be a little bit of sort of massaging of maybe like the draft points or something like that to maybe a certain point, but I don't think the answer should be get rid of the academy. So I think they do too much good. For even, and it's not even for like players that are going to play AFL, it's for just junior development in general. So the quality of Australian rules football in Queensland gets up, and then so they produce more players, and it sort of comes around like that. So it's not even, I don't think it's even about, at the end of the day, even about AFL players. I think it is about just building that culture of Australian rules football in Queensland, or in Southeast Queensland and Gold Coast in general.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because I do a, you know, at the start of each episode, I give a shout out to a local footy club. And this week's, the one that I did for this one was the Broadbeach Cats, which are just the southern suburbs there. And I was reading up on them, and the list of players who have played at that club at one time and another. Nick Riewoldt, Dane Zorko, Zorko's brother was the coach here, Lockie Weller, Will Ashcroft, Bailey Scott, Nathan Ablett. And there were probably another dozen and a half I could have listed that I didn't. And it's like, holy cow, this, I mean, and granted, I don't know if they played there for multiple years, but because I know Riewoldt's from Tasmania, if I'm not mistaken. But you know,
yes, originally, yeah.
Yeah. But they, you know, they all, you know, cut their teeth with this club at one time or another. You know, so there is, you know, good, you know, footy being played there. And, you know, I think you've got to do whatever you can to help some of those players stay closer to home. You know, when I did the Eagles preview, we were talking about Harley Reid and, you know, him being, you know, Victorian based and such, and Waza King, who's a mad Eagle supporter, said, well, the thing about him though, is that he's actually, yes, he's from Victoria, but he's, you know, he's born and raised a couple of hours outside of Melbourne. So he's not Melbourne based. So it's not, you know, there's not that necessarily that specific draw to the city of Melbourne that maybe a, you know, Jason Foreman, Howard Francis had with Adelaide wanting to get back to South Australia. So as he said that, you know, that club tent, you know, that West Coast tends to look at players who play in the, you know, in some of the, like the country footy, you know, in Victoria for, you know, for bringing in players from Victoria, because they're outside of you know, the Melbourne proper, if you will, which.
Yeah. That's a strategy that a lot of clubs, like I think Brisbane have done that. They've looked for Vic country players. We've got a couple, I think Ben Ainsworth is a Vic country player. Bailey Humphrey, who we brought in last year, is a Vic country player. So there is definitely a strategy bringing in those players outside of the Melbourne bubble, quote unquote, that's a strategy of retention, because these players don't have that draw. There's not a team that's playing out of Lakes Entrance. So there's not that draw to play for that Melbourne team.
So, you know, before we jump into a few other things here, yeah, I mentioned his name before, but do you think that Ben King is saying the right things right now? Or are you feeling somewhat confident that he's going to be in a Suns jumper in 2025?
The problem I have is that I always, when I get this question asked, my brain immediately goes to, okay, what's the percentage probability? My statistician's hat comes out for no reason. I mean, it either happens or it doesn't, right? So yeah, I guess a 50-50 chance. But the way he's talking about the Gold Coast generally, and the way he seems to be, I think, relatively enjoying his play, and the fact that we've now got Dimmer in, we've got a bunch of academy players coming up through the ranks. There's a lot to be excited about at the club. Mm-hmm. I say he's odds on that he stays. But, you know, I've been wrong plenty of times in my life.
Well, not in terms of having friends, though. You did that. You got that spot on correct, though.
Thanks, mate.
That's great. I think King's probably more likely than not to stay for this contract. I think the big question will be when free agency rolls around 2 years after. I think that would probably be then 2027. I think that's when that comes up. That might be a bit more of a flashpoint than this year. I would expect him to re-sign this year. But again, like Matt, I've been wrong before. We could be surprised.
Yeah, yeah.
But if he's a pillar of our success in that period, and we're suddenly playing finals, you know, hell, maybe even making, dare I say it, a semi-final, he may continue on at that point. Where he might. That's the hope, right? That we are entering into a period of prosperity for the Suns. So. Optimistic.
Yeah. And I think, I think you should be. I mean, I who knows, maybe you can go out and get Max.
Yeah, I'd love nothing more.
That's bait for St Kilda supporters. That
I've already recorded the St Kilda preview, so I don't have to answer questions about that one then when they hear this. So you're looking at your first five. Of course, you know the when they put the fixture together, they of course had to have you facing off against Richmond. At Marvel, which I just absolutely love. I love that, and I just. I'm hoping that all the Tigers supporters, have their welcome home signs for Dema, at Marvel when they I just have loved to just sledge on them during that. But you got Adelaide, the Bulldogs, the Giants, and the Hawks. So you've got some clubs that, Richmond, I think, is safely say is in a rebuild. Okay.
Yes.
I don't think. Now, granted, they've got some good veteran players here, but I don't think Richmond's going to be competing for a spot in the eight this year. I don't think so. I think they may be more likely to be competing for a different type of award in the AFL. But there are a couple of other clubs that may be racing towards that instead of them. Adelaide should have played finals last year if they did a review. The Bulldogs, they're kind of an enigma. That's a club that has got a lot of talent, but they can't always seem to get out of their own way. The Giants, I think were, a year ahead of where we thought they were going to be, last year. And then Hawthorne, could be better. You've got North Melbourne, you've got the Eagles twice this year. You got the Giants, you got the Bombers again, another enigma. You got, of course, Brisbane. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the Tigers twice. Yep. So the fixture is somewhat favorable to you there, because you've got three clubs who a lot of people are probably thinking are going to be finishing in the bottom four. So you should, if you do what you're supposed to do, you should be able to bank, in theory, you should be able to bank six wins right there. Which means you've got to go out
this before Kings.
Yeah, you got to
this sounds like our podcast.
Yeah, you got to go out and win another seven or eight games to play finals.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the history of the AFL suggests you need to get off to a good start. It's very hard to be playing catch up.
Right.
So when you talk about those first five games, especially teams like Adelaide, the Bulldogs, especially, they're teams that are also fighting for maybe the bottom half of the eight.
Right.
So they're the teams that, if we want to be competing, we should be getting a win there, or at least splitting those results. Mm-hmm. But then we must beat Richmond, because that has to be, if they're projecting where we think they're projecting, we must win that. GWS is in Adelaide. It's for gather round, so it is a bit of a, there's no real home ground advantage there, so it could be a bit of a coin flip, but I do expect GWS to win that one. And then you've got Hawthorn, which should be a win, even though the Hawks are improving. So if we could finish that first five 3-2, I'd be pretty happy with that, and I'd be happy to push on with that. But at the same time, with the Suns, we could be 0-5 quite easily. Yeah. In panic stations again.
I hate to say this, and I'm going to go ahead and put it out there just because I like to be a smartass from time to time. There are supporters from Victorian clubs right now that are listening to this that are saying, well, the Suns Giants game, there's no home ground advantage regardless of where they're playing.
that is not wrong.
Now, hopefully that changes. Yes. I think that if the Suns have the support, I think it would change more rapidly with the Gold Coast than at GWS. I think the Gold Coast supporters would be more likely to gravitate towards fielding. What is it now? Heritage Bank Stadium? Isn't that what it's called now?
I think that assessment is correct.
Yeah. So what's your bold prediction? What's the prediction that each one of you has for the club that other people might sit there and go, wow, okay, I'm not sure about that, but that's a pretty gutsy call there.
You can go, Keeks.
Oh, okay. Jeez. All right. Thinking time. I need the Jeopardy music. All right. I think I think my bold prediction would be Ben Ainsworth makes the All-Australian team.
Love it.
Yeah. I think there's enough there that we saw, especially late last year. I think he's the prototypical dimmer player, where I think that he has the skill set. He's fast. He's good above his head. He's usually a pretty good kick outside of kicking for goal, which we're all Suns fans are very much aware. But I think that he has all those attributes that will make him step up to that next level with that extra level of coaching and sort of having a coach that will utilize his talents sort of and utilize what he's great at probably more than previous coaching regime.
Okay. And how about you, Matthew? Nah.
I don't know how ballsy I want to be with my prediction, but, you know, go hard or go home, I suppose. I reckon Lukosius is going to be flirting with the top five in the Coltman. Ooh. How's that, Keegan?
I like that.
Wow. I reckon he's going to get another 10 to 15 goals on what he did last year. He got 40 or 41 goals, if I recall correctly off the top of my head. It's the Yips. And better service going forward, there's every reason why he can find an extra half goal a game. And he's a goal sneak at the best of times. I have a really good feeling that he's going to take the right step this year.
Okay. So let me ask you this then. The Suns season has come to an end after whatever round it happens to be, whether it's round 24, first, second, third, fourth round of finals, whatever it happens to be. What is the headline in the Gold Coast Bulletin?
Ooh, you can go for this one first, Matt.
Yeah, it's your local paper.
Yes, exactly.
I want to make like a really good pun incorporating either Dimmer or I don't want to do like the sun sets because every single season ends with the sun setting. It's the most obvious grab, but I can't think of one in limited time. So apologies for the lack of creativity, but I think the headline will be sun sets on a promising season, still no finals.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, I think it will be something along the lines of similar to what Matt said. I'm trying to think now off the top of my head. Now I'm under pressure, but I think it will be more around someone like a Tuke Miller favorite for Brownlow.
Okay,
wouldn't that be great?
Hey, I tipped it last year, so I promise I won't tip him this year. Okay. I'll tell you what. I had one. I don't know what kind of a paper that is. I don't know if they would do anything that's a little bit naughty, but I thought something, you know, that would have I don't know. I don't even know if I could say this. Even though I put explicit on my podcast, I don't know if I can even say this, but it could be, you know, something like, you know, the Gold Coast develops a hard wick, maybe with Dimmer with a strategically placed candle instead of the flame on it, like a big, like the sun logo on the jumper on it. I don't know. Maybe that's just a little too risque for.
No, the Gold Coast Bulls would definitely like do that.
So I don't know. I just thought, yeah, maybe they developed a hard wick. I don't know. That's a, you know. Or you can't hold a candle to our Hardwick or something like that. I don't know.
we'll workshop it. We'll approach the bulletin about this.
Yeah, I'll tell you when you guys come up with the shirts and sell them on your website. I want 10%.
We'll be directing your funds that way for sure.
Okay, good deal. So hey, you guys ready for a little Suns trivia before we wrap this up here?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, all right, let's go. Do we want to compete, Matt, or do we want to work together, you think?
I'm not working. Yeah, I'm
competing. No, competition. Yeah, all right.
Absolutely.
I would work together.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd work together on these. And again, I don't know. I think you'll do okay on these, okay? And granted, you have to keep in mind you guys don't have as long a history as some of these other clubs have. I mean, I've gone back and asked questions from like the 1950s and 60s for some people, you know. No. And so First one. Okay. At which two currently used stadiums have the Suns yet to win a game?
Ooh. Adelaide Oval comes to mind.
Yeah, oh, Adelaide Oval's one.
They're 0-11 there.
Have we won in Geelong before?
Oh, yeah, probably haven't won at, what is it called, GMHBH?
That's the other one.
Yes, that you got them both. Yeah. 0 wins and 8 losses there. So you got both of them there. That's good.
Now we know it's good you got them right. By the losses.
Yeah, it's good you got the question right. Not good that you haven't. And again, I hope it's, I don't know if the Suns are in Geelong this year, but I hope it's 0-9. Let's, you know, full disclosure. That's the one. Yeah, that's the one. So, okay, the next one. These four players were the club's leading goal kickers last year.
Lukosius, King, Casbolt?
Oh, no, I don't think Casbolt played enough games, I reckon.
That's the first three.
Oh, that's the first three? Uh-huh. Oh, there you go.
Who's the fourth?
Ainsworth?
That's the
fourth. Benny?
That's the fourth.
Well,
yeah.
Well done. Yeah, well, there we go.
King with 40, Lukosius with 39, Casbolt 24, Ainsworth 21.
Oh, there we go. That's a drop-off.
There's a drop-off there.
Yep. So, who are the five players who have played at least 150 games for the Suns?
Oh, okay.
Same day, David Swallow.
Mm-hmm. Jared Harper.
Did Ablett hang around long enough
to play 150 for the Suns? Oh, I don't know.
Nah, again, getting the negative from Craig.
No, I didn't think. So those, are we on track with those first three?
Those three are Swallow, Harbrow, and Day are all correct. Yes.
Oh, all right. Who else has been around a long time? Oh, is Sean Lemons has played 150 games.
Has he?
Nope.
Has he?
Nope.
Not Sean Lemons?
No? Oh, okay. Not Sean Lemons. Okay.
He should this year, but he hasn't yet.
Oh, okay. All right.
The other two are both on
Tom
the
Lynch.
List right now.
Tom Lynch would have to be one. Mm-mm. Did he get to 150? No, nah. Just short.
So you said the other two are on the list now, are they?
The other two are still the other two are on the Suns list right now. Yep.
Oh. Oh, jeepers.
Yeah.
I'm drawing a blank, and that's really disappointing.
One has come up in conversation, the other one has not.
Don't go Carmichael Hunt Keys. I'll steer clear of that.
No, I'm a blank.
Tuk Miller hasn't got 150.
Tuk Miller is one. Yep, he's 173. The other one has played 166. And he's very disappointed in both of you right now.
Yeah. Probably is. So he should be. I'm disappointed in me right now.
It's hard. No, I can't.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank.
No, I think we'll have to pass it to you, Craig. You'll have to tell us, and we can be both disappointed in ourselves.
Okay. What if I told you he was a forward? Or he's listed as a forward?
It's not Sexton. He hasn't played that many games, has he?
Alex Sexton.
Yes, he has. Yep. 166, yep.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Jeez.
No way.
I didn't realize he played that much.
Yeah.
Oh, but he hasn't played much in the past year or two, so that's probably I blame it on that.
Okay. These two players had over 100 tackles for the Suns last year.
Rowell probably Tuk.
You got one of them.
Or Swallow.
It was David Swallow, yep. Yeah. 190 and 101.
Yep. I hope we both said Rao straight away.
Okay, I have to look at these numbers here really quickly because I think I might have one thing that I have done incorrectly here. I'm going to go ahead and let's see here. This player who played 18 games had the highest disposal efficiency for the club last year at
80.28%. Oh, 80.28%. There's no one that kicks that well at this club. What are you talking about? Yeah.
You need someone who just handballs, Keeks. Who just handballs?
18 games, so they missed a few.
That's couldn't be Took. Because that'd only be a couple of months of games missed. My mind immediately goes to someone like Raoul because he would just be handballing out of the guts.
My mind goes to someone like Brandon Ellis.
You guys play charades there?
Play 18 games last year?
I think he... We play charades.
Sounds like Brandon Ellis?
No, sounds like Raoul.
Oh,
Will Powell.
Okay.
He would have to be one of my favorite players at the Suns.
Yeah, quite shout out to Will Powell because he's a legend.
This player led the club with over nine 1-percenters per game last year. And I love the 1-percenter stat.
Yeah, it could be anything. It's so wide.
It's kind of like the Spike Lee movie, Do the Right Thing. It could be the It could be the Spike Lee Award or something like that. Do the Right Thing.
Yeah, it'll be a defender, Matt. It'll be like either Ballard or Collins or someone like that.
Yeah, Ballard would be my guess.
Ballard. We'll lock Ballard in.
I would have gone with Collins. Okay. This player led the club with 474.9 meters gained per game last year. And they played 17 games.
They like bombing along.
Are we in Took territory yet? Did he play? How many games did Took play last year? I really should have taken notes.
Yeah, I should have taken notes on last year.
Wait a minute. You said in the email you were studying. No, Took only played 13 games.
I'm studying. I studied too far back. I studied history. Not last year. We like Noah Anderson, maybe?
Yeah, that would be my guess, Noah.
It would be Rory Atkins.
Rory Atkins.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
He didn't play for. He was one that Jude didn't rate at all. So he didn't play a lot of the year until late on when Stephen King took over. So that's interesting.
17 games. Yep. And the last one. This player who played 23 games led the club in time on ground at 97.1%.
I mean, Collins is a beast for that. He's on ground.
Yeah. I would say Collins if I was guessing on time on ground. Doesn't come off very often.
I would go with that one also. Yeah. I would go with that one also. I did one. I did one of these with one of the other clubs, and the person that had the highest percentage on that one was over 99%.
Jeez.
It's like
their effort.
It's like they never, it almost has to be a defender. You know,
it's a successful team.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, you know, the thing I forgot to ask you guys is, where did the name Turn Over the Tape come from for the podcast?
You can take this, Keeks.
Oh, I can take this one. All right. So we were coming up with names for the podcast, and we sort of like sunset. Like there were a lot of sun puns that we weren't really happy with. So back when we watched early Suns 2011-2012 with our friends, there was sort of a lot of players from back in those days a lot of people don't remember. So we've got like Luke Russell, Rex Liddy, so a lot of players that no one has. And so one of them was a guy called Seb Tape. And he was a favourite of ours because he tried his absolute guts out and ended up having a very successful career playing at Southport in the QAFL afterwards. But he was always a sort of a bit of a favorite because he was so hard at it. But yeah, his foot skills were sometimes a little bit lacking. So he was a lot of turnovers from him. So we just had, and tape was a very much a podcast audio medium sort of word. So we sort of focused in on that and sort of settled on that. So it's very much an in-joke for me and Matt and a few of our friends, but doesn't make a lot of sense to everyone else.
Okay. So yeah, I'm looking here. He played Seb Tape. He played a total of 40 games. He played 40 games. Not terribly memorable though. 6 wins and 34 losses.
Unless you're in our group.
Unless you're in our group and you remember the likes of Michael Code, then you don't really get those early Suns players that are very much forgotten to time.
Yeah, Mike, there were probably some early early games where Keegan and I would go and we would yell out, you know, turnover tape, because, you know, we were knuckleheads. What can I say?
Now, have you had him on the podcast as a guest as of yet? Or
no,
does the name preclude him from wanting to come on?
Yeah, I hope not. I hope not. We haven't reached out to him. So we'll wait and see. He might reach out to us. He might want to come and correct a few of his misconceptions around his football. We'll wait and see.
Okay. I'd also happily have the podcast just be him abusing us for like 20 minutes.
That would be an episode.
Well, I think maybe you should, you know, if you reach out to him, you might want to say we're going to give you a 30-minute rebuttal, you know, to just, you know, dress us down for having named the podcast as we did here.
Yeah.
We'll make it an explicit episode.
Yeah. We'll put the red A on it.
There you go. I just now put it on there regardless. And sometimes it's warranted, sometimes it's not. So I just put it on there just as a precaution, because I sometimes, one, I've been a teacher for 30 years and I spent time in the Navy. So I had to take classes on how to learn those, how to use those words properly back when I was in the Navy. So before we go, guys, where can people find Turnover the Tape? Whether it be on your socials or find the podcast itself. And I will link to all of these in the show notes, but where can they find you?
Oh, thanks. Did you want to do this, Matt, or do you want me to handle all the...
Keegan, you do all the social handles.
I do all the socials at the start of our podcast. So at Turnover the Tape on X or Twitter. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, turnoverthetape@gmail.com. We also have Turnover the Tape on Facebook. And our podcast is on all podcasts, so Spotify, iTunes, we're all there. So if you just search Turn Over the Tape, we will turn up.
Okay, and you'll turn over.
And we'll turn over.
Yeah, yeah. So why do I have a feeling that we're going to start seeing some hard wicks being referenced? I think that just is a...
If we mention it in one of our podcasts coming up, take it as a specific little nod to Mr. Ukraine.
We years ago, gosh, it's probably been 20 years ago, there was a brand, and I doubt they made their way to Australia, but there was a brand of shirts here in the United States called Big Johnson Shirts. And there was a little tongue-in-cheek pun that referenced these different Johnsons, if you will. And it was actually a bit of a battle at school with the people who were the dress code police, if you will, whether or not kids could wear them, and just how far over the line were these shirts. I was never much for the, you know, being one of the as we like to joke, the dress code Nazis. I'm going to tell you this story, if you guys don't mind. Here, we've already, I've not told this story on the podcast before. We had a young lady. I never had her in class. I had her sister in class, but we had a teacher who still works in the district. She's not teaching anymore, but she was the quote unquote dress code Nazi. You know, if your outfit at school was not exactly within guidelines, you're off to the office to speak to the principal, headmaster, that sort of thing. This young lady came into class one day and didn't see her in this, but she came in a very low cut shirt that left little to the imagination for the teenage boys at the high school. And this teacher just went apoplectic about it. And she said, you know, Mrs. Teacher, someday I'm going to be old like you. And every once in a while, you just have to take the puppies out for a walk. And this teacher did not know how to respond to that. Just absolutely threw her for a loop. She had no idea how to come back to that. But I don't think this kid wore that outfit to school ever again. I wish I would have been there to hear.
That was my worst nightmare when I was a teacher back in the day, and that would be my worst nightmare.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
Like I told you off air, I still like it about 99 days out of 100. There's always that one day where I just go, oh, why are we doing this? This was a waste of a day, or things didn't go well. And, you know, but you know, kids are kids. you know, technology has changed, but kids are kids. Just, you know, trying to get them to be successful and give a darn about what they're doing in life. But Keegan, Matt, I appreciate you letting me tell that really dumb story there at the end. But
all good.
Yeah. And guys, I want to thank you tremendously for taking time out of your day. And, you know, now you guys get to go have lunch, and I'm going to download this, and I'm probably going to put out another episode before I go to bed tonight. But I think this is going to be the year that the Suns, if they're not on the cusp, I think they might actually find their way into the eight finally. Those of you who are just listening and not watching it on YouTube, I've seen hands raised in prayer, fingers crossed here with this. But I just think it's such a talented side. And I think Sun supporters have got to tip their cap to Stuart Dew for getting these young men to the point where they are right now, where Dima gets to take the helm and drive the ship home, if you will. Okay. Yeah. And I think
agreed.
he gets to reap the reward for it. And, you know, it might have been nice to see, you know, Stuart Dew get the opportunity to have that happen, but, you know, he served his purpose there. And you know, now it's time to, you know, to take the next step with Hardwick in charge there. So guys, I wish you all the best this season, except when they play the Cats, which is what I tell everybody else whenever I have them on. So, you know, 22 games this year. I hope you guys have a great year. You can go 22-1 for all I care. Okay. wouldn't that be awesome?
I'll take 22-1 if it's on offer right now.
There you go. Well, yeah. Well, it sure beats 1-22 because we've seen clubs competing to do that here recently.
Very true.
So last little bit of advice, you know, who do you think is going to be in the top four before we get out of here? Who are your top four clubs this year? I think we know two of them.
So I would go Collingwood, Brisbane, Melbourne, and maybe GWS for fourth.
Okay.
Controversial opinion. I think Melbourne have had too many off-season dramas. I'm keeping them to not be in the four. It's going to be Collingwood, Lions, Carlton, and I don't know, a crapshoot for fourth. Probably Port, as much as for whatever reason, I just don't like Port Adelaide. So inevitably, because of that, they will come fourth.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, Keegan, Matt from the Turn Over the Tape podcast, thanks for coming on to help preview your Suns this year. And Keegan, I hope you get to see them as many times as you possibly can. Matt, I hope your pool warms up for you, because, you know, it sounds like you're absolutely suffering up there.
So cold.
So, okay, what's the coldest temperature you have ever experienced? Let me ask you that before we go.
On the Gold Coast, 5 what? Degrees Celsius. Anywhere five? Else, like okay. -5. I went to Perisher once.
Okay, been to Russia.
Oh, sorry, Perisher. Not okay. Quite so far. Perisher Blue. It's just a mountain range in New South
Wales. The Blue Mountains. Yeah. Okay. Good. So that's where they have. Yep. All righty. Well, gentlemen, hey, have a great day. And I'll shoot you a note when this thing is available. And I hope that Seb comes on your podcast soon and just, you know, tears you guys apart for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Not fair enough.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys. See ya. Cheers. Hey, Keegan, Matt, I appreciate you taking time out of your day. I know we were in three different locations for this, and love the fact that you two were able to coordinate this with me. I truly, truly appreciate that. Great discussion. Remember, folks, you can find everything related to my podcast over at my website, yankonthefooty.com. You can find links to my Facebook page, to my X or Twitter page, @yank_on, LinkedIn, Instagram, my email address, yankinthefooty@gmail.com. Like I said, I do hope you'll subscribe to the podcast over at my website. If you enjoy the podcast, I do hope you'll share it with your friends and family. Tell them all about it. You know, you want to help support the podcast, you can certainly do that as well. I will not say no to that, and I will definitely appreciate that. Remember, you do give it a follow. You'll be on the email list as soon as it comes out. Ladies and gentlemen, look out for one another. Check up on your friends and family. make sure they're okay. If you need to talk to somebody, or if they need to talk to somebody, get them in touch with the correct people. I have those phone numbers listed in my show notes of every single episode of the podcast. If you need to get out and have that coffee or go out and have that that pint with someone, go out and do that. Get out and enjoy the summertime there. I'm looking forward to enjoying the winter there, which is kind of going to be like springtime for me. But folks, as always, may your dribble kick never hit the post. I will catch you later. And this has been episode 305 of A Yank on the Footy. Don't forget again that you can reach me at yank_ on Twitter or X, or yankonthefooty@gmail.com, A Yank on the Footy podcast over on Facebook, A Yank on the Footy on Instagram, and ayankonthefooty.com. You can head to all of those links right from there as well. And like I said, I do hope you'll subscribe. And if you enjoyed the podcast, leave me a great review. I'd love a 5-star. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There you go. All right, folks. Until next time. This is Craig Wessels from Sandusky, Ohio, and this was episode 305. Cheers. Bye-bye.